and welcome to our Avengers Age of Ultron spoiler special episode. I'm Lucien, and I'm here with Michael, as always. And
yeah.
We are joined today by a very special guest, and that is Chris Townsend, who, I'd like to say, one of the stars of the film. Welcome, Chris.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, fascinating person to have on as a special guest, because you, as I discovered today, I was scrolling through the cast list of the film. I always love to see the people who have kind of minor roles in big blockbusters, and you're down there as a party guest. So, how did you like get involved in the film in the first place?
It's quite funny. I joined an extras agency last year, just to kind of like fill in some gaps while I was doing like other acting jobs and like setting up my theatre company and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I got sort of like a random, day on like Downton Abbey, and then about like 3 weeks later, I basically got a phone call because Avengers was working under a code name. It was called After Party. But in the text they sent me, they basically said, "Are you free for Marvel After Party?" Well, it's like, don't use a code name and then put Marvel, because we know what this is.
Yeah.
So I said, like, yeah, I'm free. And then I didn't get selected. And then literally, like, the following day, they said, look, can you come to London for a costume fitting this afternoon to film tomorrow?
Wow.
And I was like, I can't. Like, I'm in the middle of work. Like, I can't come today, but I'll do anything. Just get me on the set. I'm a huge fan of the films. So luckily they let me go, like, the following morning to do the fitting as well as shoot. And it was literally, like, a 5:30 wake-up, drove to Shepperton. They sort of told me a selection of stuff I had to bring. They sort of mixed that with their own costume department. And then, before you know it, I'm walking onto the set, and I'm kind of like there for like 2.5 hours while they're filming the kind of pickup shots and establishing shots for the party.
Mm. So were any of the big name actors at all on set that day, or was it just the kind of background people?
No, it was all of them.
Oh, wow.
I walk right past Robert, past Chris. And then we sort of followed Mark Ruffalo round and sort of briefly spoke to him. The only person who wasn't on set was Scarlett Johansson, because it was a long shot. Yeah, so it was a girl who looked freakishly like her, with like the tracking dots on her face to composite her face on afterwards. But other than that, yeah, they were all there.
Well, that's brilliant. So where was this being shot? Was it in Central London or in the studio or?
It's at Shepperton Studios, which, considering, I drove there, I don't actually know whereabouts it's based.
Mm.
I was sort of driving in an excited flurry.
when did you get the chance to see the film for the first time? Was it when it came out on Thursday?
Yeah, Thursday, 10:30 in the mornings, like as early as I could get without doing the midnight show in the night before.
Yeah. I know they had midnight screenings here where Michael and I live, but I really couldn't get up that early, so I went at about 1 p.m. in the afternoon, the first afternoon showing. I was reading your review over on your own blog, and you seemed to like the film quite a bit.
I did. The thing is, it's hard to. Thanks for having a look. That was just that's the blog something I set up. Just a couple of friends requested that I do it, because I'm normally quite opinionated and will shout about anything and to anyone. I liked it. I think it was hard for me to be biased, just because I am like a massive Marvel geek. But I do think it was very rushed. I do think it was slightly overcrowded, but having a look at your review, kind of like I agree on some of the points. But overall,
Go on.
No, I just the only bit I really didn't like is I thought Thor's side story, I thought it was really stuffed in and unnecessary. His sort of like weird chasing of his strange vision was just kind of irrelevant.
Definitely seemed like something that the studio executives kind of stuck in just to establish the story of Thor Ragnarok and the Infinity War, like at the last minute. I know that with Thor the Dark World, I know they were doing reshoots, re-edits up until about a week before the release, just trying to get it to fit in more tightly with the cinematic universe. And that is a problem that has affected a lot of these films somewhat. But I think that I think this one managed to get past it for the most part.
I'm more concerned with Ant-Man that the date hasn't moved considering all the problems that it had. So I think out of the more recent ones, I think that's going to be issue filled.
Yeah, but I mean, I had a lot of doubts about Guardians as well before that came out. But I don't think Peyton Reed really has the kind of integrity as a filmmaker and as an artist that James Gunn had, that he'll be able to carry such a kind of strange film that doesn't seem to have a lot of mainstream appeal, really.
Yeah, it's a really weird, like, I didn't even know who he was. Like, when I sort of had to look him up and see what he's done.
He made a few sort of mediocre comedies with Jim Carrey and Renée Zellweger and such.
Yeah, it was weird, but then I suppose, like, all Kevin Feige and Marvel's, like, left-field choices have always paid off. So, in that sense, I'm trusting it, but I was just a bit weird that the date never moved.
Mm. Another thing I was going to mention was, did you see Robert Downey walking out of the interview on Channel 4 News the other day? I know being from the UK, you'd be kind of aware of that.
I did, yes. I watched I saw it posted on Twitter and watched it, because it was the same interviewer who really irked Quentin Tarantino last year.
Yeah, he's not, I don't think, he really needs to stick to politics. He should not be doing pop culture and the arts related things at all. He's not very good at it.
His responses on Twitter were really interesting because he, like, people kind of called him out on it and just said, you know, that wasn't cool, etc. And he sort of said, if it was just about the Avengers, then Channel 4 wouldn't have covered it.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it might have been
Marvel's fault, maybe, perhaps, for sending Robert into an interview with Channel 4 News, expecting it to not get more into the personal side of things.
Yeah, he sort of almost like poo-pooed the entire movie and kind of, you know, wanted to give it some kind of levity, if you like, by sort of prying into this guy's issues.
And even at the end when Robert, you know, compared it, he said, oh, I don't want to do this kind of Diane Sawyer thing. It is a week in which Bruce Jenner's interview with Diane Sawyer has been the most watched Friday night U.S. television show in 12 years. So these kind of in-depth celebrity personal life interviews are clearly something that the networks really, really want to get in the headlines at the moment.
I don't know much about that. I mean, I only heard on the radio say about the whole sort of Bruce Jenner lady thing. But
I don't know much about it, but it did huge business last night for the ABC network. It got about 20 million viewers. It was crazy.
That is insane. That's, mind you, that whole family, they could, anything they do, they'll get like 20 million viewers.
So back to Age of Ultron, I was fooled pretty much into expecting a Spider-Man post-credit scene, but in my attempt to avoid spoilers, I saw these few headlines about this post-credit scene, didn't delve far enough to realize that it was fake. And so sat in the cinema thinking, oh, and everyone who left, I said, you're all fools, Spider-Man's coming on, and then just black screen.
Yeah, I knew it was a fake, because I kind of watched it, and then I watched an interview with Joss, and kind of, before he even said it was a fake, like, nothing with the video fit with what they'd said about Spider-Man, but it was, I thought it was a double bluff in terms of no end credits, because I think the Incredible Hulk is the only other film where they didn't do a post-credit scene.
They had a mid-credit scene with Iron Man, didn't they?
No, that's like right at the end of the film.
That's the last scene of the film, yeah.
So I thought it was like a double bluff. So I sat there right till the end for Age of Ultron as well, because I thought that there's going to be something. Especially because the mid-credit scene was really, really like inferior and a bit rubbish.
Yeah, no, I really that was just awful. It seemed like it was like all of the Thanos appearances in Guardians of the Galaxy, just sort of a sort of cliched representation of what happened in those. It didn't feel like an event at all watching that.
No, I mean, I tried to make sense of it, and the only thing I sort of came away from, because obviously the Infinity Gauntlet's locked away in Asgard, the only thing I took away from it is obviously fake Odin. Obviously Loki for End of the Dark World as kind of somehow given Thanos access to it. That's the only thing I took away from it. Other than that, it was a bit hollow.
Yeah. And Stan Lee's cameo in the film, I don't think it's one of his best. I think his best, my favorite one is in The Amazing Spider-Man, where he's the library cleaner and he has these
Yeah.
big headphones on. I mean, in a film such as The Amazing Spider-Man, which I'd like to say I hate, I think that's pretty much the best moment in the film and is one of his best cameos. What would your favorite be?
Oh, do you know, it's funny because I actually forgot. Like, I forget that he's even in number one. He popped up and it surprised me. I think my favorite. Yeah, I really like the library one. Also, probably when he played the postman in the second Fantastic Four movie. Just because it was a bit of a more substantial role, and it was also, I don't know, it was a ludicrous film anyway, and I think to sort of putting him in that sort of role just made it even more preposterous, and I liked it because it was just so stupid.
With his appearance in Age of Ultron, I almost felt there was a level of sort of they were going too far when he says Excelsior, and it was like they're not even trying to keep it subtle anymore. It's just like trying to get the broadest recognition of him as possible by having him say his catchphrase and all this.
I wasn't a fan of that because that takes him away from being like a World War II veteran to sort of actually being Stan Lee.
Yep.
Which, yeah, it wasn't. It was one of the two or three jokes that sort of fell flat.
How did you find Aaron Taylor-Johnson's Quicksilver in comparison to Evan Peters' iteration? Because I am really not a fan of Aaron Taylor-Johnson as an actor, except I think he's pretty good in the first Kick-Ass. Apart from that, never liked him.
I haven't seen him enough to have like I don't know. Like I've probably only seen him in Kick-Ass, but I think
If you saw him in
I'm a bit.
Godzilla, you would really have not a lot of
Oh, of
respect for him.
course, Godzilla. But it was in terms of. I mean, that was just a terrible film anyway. But I think it's hard because I sort of can't let my bias sort of dislike of the X-Men movies not tarnish Evan Peters for me. I have major issues with the X-Men movies and kind of how they handle everything the
I
last few
think I
years.
think while Days of Future Past was very mediocre, I think that scene was it was, it was very witty, and I think there was just nothing memorable about Quicksilver in Age of Ultron, really, at all.
No, he sort of he I think he suffered from I think they both suffered from just like the film being overstuffed, I think. And I think to kind of introduce him, particularly obviously because what happens at the end of the film, almost seemed like a waste. You know, I think the time that they spent on Quicksilver could have been sort of serviced. Well, other characters could have been serviced better.
I think Steve Rogers kind of drew the short straw on this film. He didn't really get a lot to do.
Which
Uh,
is a
do you have...
shame because he's probably going to draw the short straw in his own movie next year because the amount of people that are in it.
Yeah, but I mean, he had that strange one dream flashback sequence with Peggy Carter, which didn't really make any sense to me. I don't know why that was there.
No, I mean, I sort of, from an emotional standpoint, it kind of made sense because obviously, like, he has this huge regret of, you know, missing the dance with her and never kind of getting that. But I think it could have been
I
presented
don't think
better.
this film I don't think this film and that part of the film was the time and place to return to his sort of I just woke
Sure.
up, I missed a date sort of storyline.
Yeah, it was, yeah, it could have been handled better, or like you said, at a different point.
In terms of what happens to Hulk at the end, while it actually reminded me of the end of The Dark Knight Rises in terms of him kind of flying off with in a sort of airborne vehicle into the horizon, It definitely, you know, poses interesting questions as to where they're going to take him in the rest of the franchise.
Yeah, I am. I'm glad he wasn't blasted into space, because that rumor that never rang true with me as a fan.
Yeah.
But I'm happy. Like, I was just so happy with where they left that, because I don't want to know what they're doing with the Hulk. Like, I would just love to be surprised, I think, and I'm just sort of happy to leave it. It made sense emotionally, and it made sense narratively, like what they did with him.
Mm.
And I think it's great, because it opened up so much, and I'm really excited.
Yeah, and one last thing. So I saw in your review, you seemed very happy about the increased role for Hawkeye, which is really something I liked, because I've never even really liked Jeremy Renner outside of these films, but I thought he did a really good job, and I thought Linda Cardellini was cast very well as his wife, and that whole part of the film I really, really enjoyed.
Yeah, it was one of those things. Like, I came off the back of, you know, the first Avengers movie, and I said, you know, I echoed what pretty much everyone else said, is he was really, really shortchanged as a character. And I think this time it was obvious that Hawkeye's role in Age of Ultron had come out of obvious discussions behind the scenes with Jeremy Renner. And I'm glad, because I wasn't too keen on the sort of the sudden reveal of a family. But
yeah,
I think how he played it and how that sort of opened up many avenues for the other characters to explore stuff in the film, I thought it was great. And I was really glad that he was finally given a chance to kind of actually, like, play the character.
Some of the interactions between him and Scarlet Witch at the end were really well scripted, I think, as well by Joss.
Yeah, it was anything. I think anything with him were like the strong points of the film. I don't think he had a weak moment that I can recall. I'm going to go and see it again, so it's just so much to take in. But I don't think he had a weak moment in the film, and it was great. I was really pleased with that.
And it was such a relief with them bringing his family in that you know, there is not going to be some, you know, cliched, obvious Black Widow Hawkeye sort of sexual tension thing going on for the next few films through Civil War, because that would have just been far too obvious a step to take.
Yeah, it's more of the way I sort of how they've done them in the Marvel Cinematic Universe is I kind of look at them, it's almost like a sort of survivor's bond that they've got, you know, when people go through
they
sort
have
of
this history together. And,
yeah, and that works. To turn that into anything else would be, I think, disingenuous, but also forced, I think.
So tell us, what do you, you mentioned your theater company earlier, what do you... what's going on with that? What have you got planned for the future?
Currently we're kind of we're sort of in pre-production of a web series project, because we sort of, the idea is we want to do a theatre show each year, and then in between those kind of do video content, whether that's short films or web series. It's one of those horrible things. It's kind of been pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. But the plan is we want to try and create enough of a portfolio and enough of a profile that we can, you know, get viewers and you know, a couple of the works that we want to put together, kind of use them as examples for Kickstarter funds and get some bigger stuff going. And it's really in its infancy. We set up last year. We put on our first show, which was written by me, which was a play about superheroes.
Can I find it online anywhere?
Yeah, our website is intangible-productions.co.uk, and that's kind of got like a gallery on there and a bit more information. But the company was really set up as a kind of umbrella to do the show, because it was a passion project of mine for years. It had been written for like 5 years. And then we want to do it again at a different point. It was really just a sort of... like a tester for bigger things. So we're really in our infancy at the minute, but it's something that I've got a huge interest in, is like, you know, creating and producing my own content and telling stories and in any way, really.
Mm-hmm. I see. This is is there a production of this showing on the 29th of April?
There is not. No.
Okay. It says it on your website, or maybe that. That was last year. Sorry.
Yeah, that's cool.
2014. It looks very, very, very cool. I will continue to keep track of this. And do you have any more acting work, appearances on, you know, Downton Abbey or whatever lined up?
No, no. The latest thing I've done, I was in a couple of commercials for a casino chain, which have been in cinemas and Sky channels, but sort of targeted to the relevant areas. And then nothing at the minute. It's the nature of this game, really. You have no idea what's going to come next. So it's sort of just, which I like. I like the variety and I like not knowing, but it would be nice to sort of say to people, oh, definitive, you know, this is what I'm doing next. But currently, I have nothing of excitement to share.
Okay. Well, thanks for joining us. People can find you on Twitter. Your handle is C_L_T_man.
That's me.
And thank you very much for joining us today. It's been very interesting talking to you. So, bye.
No worries. Thank you. Okay. I do have one more piece of trivia to share.
Okay.
Although I only had a very small role in the movie, the visual effects supervisor at Marvel has the same name as me. So I actually got my name huge on the screen at the end credits, even though it wasn't great. Me. But I'll pretend it was.
Well, if I see the film the second time, and I do plan to, I will make sure to keep a lookout for that and for your appearance during the party sequence. So thank you.
Thanks very much. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Okay. Michael, you still there?
I am.
He was very, very interesting. And
that was
nice guy.
Very, very interesting to hear kind of his opinions on
the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Right. Yeah.
So I think we will just briefly talk ourselves about this.
Yeah, sure.
So you saw it last night, and what did you think of it? You were being very silent this whole time.
I know, yeah. I just wanted to let him, you know, talk because
he had a lot
to say, and very interesting. Yeah, so I went to kind of a late night screening, and it was absolutely packed, which kind of surprised me.
I mean, this film we should have mentioned this to him. This film is basically looking to surpass Titanic as the number two highest grossing film of all time. So
yeah.
So I really, I was surprised how empty the screening I attended was. It was the first daytime screening after the midnight showings, and I mean, the cinema was, I'd say, probably 30% full. It was very strange.
Right. Well, I obviously went to, you know, a 9:30 screening at night, so it was completely packed. I got in there nice and early, got in my seat, but it was, you know, I didn't expect to like it because I didn't like the first Avengers,
and I'd probably spread some sort of hatred to it to you the day before.
yes, that is true.
I've been shoving my review down your throat.
Well, not quite, but but yeah, no, I didn't like the first one. I just kind of felt like it was, there was nothing to it.
I mean, I have, like, my feelings of the first one is that it's sort of like a workplace sitcom disguised as like a big budget superhero film.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
And I really like that. And I've watched it probably like, I'd say, 9 times, and I don't think the enjoyment diminishes for me. Like, it's not a great work of cinema, but it's just so much fun. And
yeah,
I have a Blu-ray steelbook edition of it, and I have a big ass poster on my wall. And
yeah, no, it's a thoroughly enjoyable movie, but it's not a good movie. But this one, I thought I actually enjoyed it a little bit more, I want to say, which interested me. But it just seemed like the director had so much he had so many ideas for action scenes that the only dialogue that he had time for in the entire film were just one-liners. It just seemed like that to me. And that's fine because of the style of movie that it is. I thought the special effects was just, for the most part, absolutely amazing. And it's even better seeing it on a big screen. But in terms of the movie itself, definitely is a lot of holes in the story. A little bit, I really enjoyed the whole comedic side of things and how kind of witty it is. But at the same time, I thought they might have taken it a little too, you know, they're kind of making jokes about very serious things in the film. I think that was okay, but they might have taken it a little bit too far. But like overall, I wasn't really too impressed, I must say. I was expecting a little bit more because it's such a, you know, as you said, they're looking to overtake Titanic as second highest grossing film of all time.
It didn't feel like an event to me. I left and I thought
it was like
I'm not really. I don't want to go home and tweet about this. I don't want to go home and talk to other people about this immediately. And like, it didn't make me excited for the rest of the franchise. And like, this is such a big, huge, just business machine that's just grossing billions of dollars of profit for Disney and Marvel.
Oh, yeah. It was.
They need people to come back. So if you have this making $2 billion and you have, as a result, that's like how many hundred million people are going to see it. You need most of those people to really want to come back for, you know, Captain America: Civil War next year, which has Iron Man in it. And I don't know. I just felt sort of like, well, I'm done now with superheroes because I put all my faith in this to be the big, expensive, loud, long one, and it was just underwhelming.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was still enjoyable. Definitely.
And I don't think Ultron was a particularly memorable villain. Like, no, like, even our entire conversation with Chris about the film just now, we didn't mention Ultron once. His name's in the title of the film.
He's played
by James Spader, who's a very famous actor. And you'd think that he was going to be more memorable. People would be talking about him. Like, Loki was the kind of the breakout. Loki and Hulk were breakouts in the first film. And I didn't really care about Ultron. He didn't engage me. He didn't have good dialogue.
I think the idea that they had originally, it seemed like the idea they had originally was, okay, the emphasis was going to be put on the fact that Ultron is the bad guy. But really, I felt like the Avengers were the bad guys, if you know what I'm trying to say. Now, I wouldn't call myself a fan of the Marvel franchise in any way, shape, or form. So I am biased towards not liking it more than I'm biased towards liking it.
Did you see how many of the films since the Avengers that have come out have you
I've seen the Captain America.
Okay.
And I saw Iron Man 3.
Did you see Guardians?
And I saw Guardians, of course. Yeah. Okay.
You didn't see Thor the Dark World?
I did see Thor the Dark World.
Oh,
well.
So you saw them all.
I think I've seen them all, yes.
Yeah. Thor the Dark World is actually my favorite.
That was great.
I think it's better than Iron Man 3 or Captain America 2. I really like Thor the Dark World.
Yeah. Now, Iron Man 3 was just...
It was a mess.
Terrible for me. It was a complete mess.
It just has the Mandarin. No, it's Killian.
Yeah.
And like, I don't remember the name of Killian because we talked about this last week. With our friend Killian, who we Googled, is Killian, and the top Google result for is Killian is Killian the Mandarin?
Like, the most memorable part of that film for me was the Robert Downey Jr. Just like hanging out in a shed, basically someone's shed. That's like the most memorable moment.
And this young kid, Ty Simpkins, Ty, I don't even know what his name was, Ty Sheridan, Ty Simpkins, I think. And they were hanging out in this town in the snow. That was about 15 minutes. That was nice. I mean, it was the equivalent, really. It was like the equivalent. It was the equivalent in that film of like the Hawkeye's house part of Avengers 2, where I'm like, there's no action, so I can enjoy these you know, charming, handsome people. But it's like, and then it ends, and then there's a falling sky, and a lot of stuff explodes, and I'm just kind of underwhelmed and phase out. Some other Easter eggs and stuff I spotted in there. Hawkeye's kids at the end are sitting on his couch reading books. They are reading the Diary of a Wimpy Kid books, both of them.
Yeah.
We have Kerry Condon, the Irish actress, recently seen as Mike's daughter-in-law in Better Call Saul.
Yes.
She randomly shows up as Friday. Jarvis' replacement. We were sitting there in the cinema and suddenly it goes, "All right, Iron Man." I was like, "What the fuck is that?" And I thought for a sec maybe what they've done is, because with recent SpongeBob, Sponge Out of Water, what they did is in every country in the world, they changed the voices of the seagulls to local UK.
Yes,
they had Alan Carr doing it, and in the US it was like Bill Hader. So I thought maybe in every country a different person is voicing this Friday character with a different accent, but no, it comes up with the credits, and it was like, oh, she's actually really famous. And she said on The Late Late Show last week, Ireland's big flagship talk show, that she was in the film, and I looked her up on IMDb, and there was no mention of her being in it. So it was a surprise appearance, but it was just weird and distracting and took me out of the scene.
Yeah, no, it did. And I don't think she did the best job in the world.
Yeah. It was a very strange decision. It was a mistake.
Do you know, did they try to do that to prevent confusion
with Jarvis?
With Jarvis, or I mean, like, because
or maybe what it was, maybe what it was,
because, confusion.
I mean, they could have gotten an American or a British female voice, but maybe they thought people would get confused hearing it over thinking that Iron Man was being spoken to by Scarlett Johansson or Scarlet Witch or something.
Okay, yeah, I mean, she definitely had a distinctive accent, so you could tell that's probably why they used.
Yeah.
Used her.
Nick Fury had a very, very small role in this. I was surprised. He was only in, I think, three scenes. I was glad, really. I mean, he was in Winter Soldier way too much, and he's not a very well-developed character in these films. But when he comes up during the big battle, he rises up on the helicarrier, and they sort of play the original theme from the first Avengers film. That was literally the moment in this film at which I was most kind of joyful. I was like, yes, this is the Avengers that I love. The helicarrier and SHIELD.
That was awesome.
America. Yeah.
And then blowing up an entire city.
Then they go back to blowing up some like weird, some like Transylvanian ancient city with like a cathedral. I don't even know where it's supposed to be, but it was like fucking Chitty Chitty Bang Bang with the evil Baron. I kept expecting them to like drive. I mean, they basically were driving all these like, I titled my review, you know, Gritty Gritty Bang Bang, because frankly, this reminded me of that. They go from this farmhouse in rural America to this weird Eastern European sort of kingdom with a baron, and he kind of gets
Elizabeth Olsen's character was just, I thought she was Scottish at first. That accent, seriously.
That accent was a mess, and so was Quicksilver's.
That was so strange. And then it's like, wait, so they're Avengers now as well? I mean, like, you know?
The Black Widow, Black Widow flashbacks were badly done. They were too short. They weren't dealt with well.
I actually thought they were quite interesting, though. You know,
they were. Like, I saw clips in the trailers of her in this ballet school, and I was like, this looks really cool. And then they only spent, I think 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah, it was a little bit underwhelming, all right. But, she only had, like, very few lines in the film. They kind of made her as an actress look very poor, which she obviously is an incredible actress, but
she's fine. She's been pretty good in some films,
it just still perplexes me how much they used Hawkeye as a character,
like contractually obligated. I'm pretty sure it was like Jeremy Renner probably had in his, like, I mean, he probably signed up for these films, I'd say, in like 2008, but he probably probably said there that like he had to have a certain amount of screen time in at least two of the films. They're like, well, we have to do that, and the fans are happy, I guess. I don't know if Hawkeye has any fans. I know Owen's a fan, but
I mean, I from the first film, it's like,
I mean, he was possessed by Loki the entire film. He really got no personality.
Yeah, then,
and in the first Thor, he literally had I think 18 seconds of screen time.
Yeah. Like he did a great job. I mean, he became a very likable character.
Finally, the final scene of the film, I think, was really underwhelming. You have these like new Avengers that Captain America and Black Widow training. It's like, really? Could they not get anyone better?
Iron Man is gone? No.
But it's like, these are our new team. You've got War Machine, who no one gives a shit about.
I remember him from like,
they're calling him they're calling him like a new Avenger, like a young person. He was in the first Iron Man. Now, he was played by Terrence Howard, and then they replaced him because of, I don't even know what happened there, but like, it's the same character, and it's like, he doesn't need to be in this. Then you have the Vision, who is already had this like existential crisis in the forest with Ultron and doesn't seem to have any interest in helping humans. Then you have the Falcon, who, like, no thanks.
Yeah, that was very disappointing.
And you have you have Scarlet Witch, and they reveal Scarlet Witch's new costume, who I got a screenshot of it here, and it doesn't fit at all with the films, but I'm not one to comment on costumes in superhero films because that's what nerds do. And we just alienated half of our listeners. So that's Avengers Age of Ultron in the can. Undoubtedly, we'll be discussing in future episodes how it slowly builds its way to $1 billion and then $2 billion.
Yeah.
Furious 7 got to $1 billion in 16 days, and right. That was a record. And I imagine this will be able to get to $1 billion in, well, let's see. It opened in international markets on Thursday and Friday. And I'll tell you now how much money it's made already worldwide. It has made, let's see, Avengers Age of Ultron. And it hasn't opened in the US. The weekend is only halfway through. It has already grossed $45 million. So that's, I guess, that's like what? It's about a quarter of its budget back already. In like one day, basically. So
wait, what was the budget on it?
I'd say the budget was, I mean, they'd like people to think it was like 225, but I'd say it's closer to 300, but depends. No one knows. Yeah. I mean, Rob Downey's being paid like $50 million for this.
Yeah, he's getting paid a lot.
I just...
It's all right.
At this point, they don't even need him. There's like a certain demographic of people that will be sold on this based on him. Well, I think those are all like women over the age of 35, but, and I mean, you need that demographic to make $2 billion. That's the demographic that went to see Avatar and went to see Titanic, you made 50 Shades of Grey, $700 million. But like, I think everyone else doesn't really give a shit about Robert Downey Jr. anymore.
Yeah.
Like, he's fine. I like him, but
he's a good actor, but he does
nothing in these. Like, I forgot he was in this until about 10 minutes in. I was like, oh yeah, Rob Downey's in this.
Really? Like, I actually felt like he played, like, he is probably, for me, one of the most, if there's, you know, a year down the road, he will be the kind of main guy that I remember from the Avengers, because he's the person who created the problem in the first place.
Yeah.
Which led them to...
But I think that Bruce Banner's role in the creation of Ultron was more sort of like complex and sort of
interesting. Yeah, and
he seemed to have like more political idealism, where Tony Stark was just like, I want to help the world, I want to do this, and then Bruce Banner seemed conflicted about it, but then in the end you have this scene where
he just does it way
through, where Bruce Banner and Tony Stark are sort of facing up against Thor and Cap, who are sort of on either side about whether to build the Vision.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was an interesting sort of science versus faith argument along the lines of some, you know, sort of climate change and otherwise. And it was like, you've got Captain America, who's this very old-fashioned, you've got Thor, who is not only a devout Christian, let's say, he's a god, versus these two science bros who care not for faith or, the otherworldly, really. I mean, neither of them have been to space yet. To see Asgard and such. So really, it's this ending. And that was interesting. I don't think they delved into it very far, but that had potential. And there was a lot of religious imagery in the Ultron's scenes with the twins, which I don't think was dealt with well, but I'm glad they brought it up.
Yeah.
But, you know, there have been films. I think, frankly, Kingsman did a better job with churches and action fighting.
It's very strange because I was getting confused at certain points when Samuel Jackson's
it's like character
comes on screen. I'm like,
and he's not killing everybody.
Yeah, but he was playing a very similar, like, his character, his role in Kingsman is just basically of pure humor.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's exactly what he was doing in
Marvel films. He's very like, he doesn't. Yeah, I mean, he has jokes, but he's. I don't like Nick Fury. He's, you know who played Nick Fury in this 1990s Captain America straight to DVD film?
I don't know.
David Hasselhoff.
Oh, gee.
As Nick Fury. I mean, Nick Fury's white in the comics.
I used to watch Knight Rider with David Hasselhoff. It's great.
You do love your vehicles.
I was like five, so it was like the best.
Okay. That's kind of like, it's a sexually explicit show. I'm not sure about 5-year-olds watching Knight Rider.
Is it really?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, Pamela, no, no, no. Pamela and
Anderson like leaning over bonnets and stuff. It's not that bad.
No, it's not. No, it's like flirtatious. That's
yeah. But there's nothing obscene in it.
No, no. Oh God, no.
Nothing obscene like Thor.
There's a flashing laser on a car. That's about it. Yeah.
And finally, before we go, did you see the picture of Jared Leto as the Joker that came out?
I did. Yes. Yes.
I hate it. I hate it. Like
it's gonna be weird.
It's interesting. But it's not the Joker. The Joker has to be sort of like, you know, kind of charismatic in a sort of
He's just a monster. Way.
Like he just looks here, looks like a demented monster who just bite your neck and like bite off your shoulder on a football pitch.
Yeah, like the Joker is kind of supposed to be like someone who kind of like Heath Ledger's character.
You can watch Heath Ledger's Joker and you can be like, I can understand why this guy gets shit done. He's smart.
Yeah.
Knows what he's doing. Like he's insane, but he's smart and he's efficient and he knows how to get the job done. This guy looks like he's just running around like giving people STDs and, you know, and just like selling heroin to teenagers in the corner of a mall of America.
It's hard to beat Heath Ledger.
Yeah. So. I don't like judging these pictures of actors and stuff. I'll judge him when I see the film.
Yeah, yeah.
But based on this, I don't think anyone's going to go to see the film because people are going to be scared. They're going to be like, I don't want to see this. Mommy, I'm scared.
Mm.
And this film's got Will Smith in it, so you'd think they're going to try sell it to families because Will Smith has a very big market with young people. And he's a star. And the kids go in and see this poster, and they're like, holy shit, I don't want to see that. This guy's a demon.
Actually, just one thing about the Avengers. The whole way through the movie, I was just thinking, this is obviously aimed towards 12-year-olds.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
This is like the 12, like 8 to 12-year-old category. Like,
there's a market for superhero films not aimed at 12-year-olds, but I don't think that
that is true. But Avengers was not one of them.
Suicide Squad. It's called Suicide Squad, but like, if it's going to tie into the Batman v Superman whole storyline, you have to somehow have it available to the young people, or it's not going to be able to make money. Anyway, we'll see how that happens. I am always a big fan of censorship and classification and such. So, thanks for listening to this Avengers Age of Ultron episode. Thank you once again to Chris Townsend for coming on. And we'll try to have more very special guests on soon. And you can follow Michael on Twitter, Talks About Tech One. Follow me, Revolutionary. Visit buzzhub.info for all your Avengers of Age of Ultron box office, which I'll be updating on over the next couple of days, and my review and our spoiler special article and such. We'll be back soon with more pod for your buck. Thank you, Michael.
All right.
Goodbye.
A fucking simple question. What the fucking talking about, Jenny? Don't you remember me? I'm from Florida. You remember me?